Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and analyze statements from Israel's Shimon Peres saying the clock is ticking for a military strike on Iran and warnings from the Russian foreign minister that an attack on Iran would be a very serious mistake fraught with unpredictable consequences. Gideon Levy, the former spokesman for Shimon Peres, joins us to provide an Israeli's perspective on whether the increasingly isolated Netanyahu government is determined to strike Iran. Then we'll look into the task of cutting $450 billion from the defense budget over 10 years that the Secretary of Defense is wrestling with. Or failing agreement by the Congressional Supercommittee, Panetta could find himself facing $500 billion in additional reductions over the next decade. We will speak with Russell Rumbaugh, who was a defense analyst on the Senate Budget Committee and is author of the new report, What We Bought, Procurement from Fiscal Year 01 to Fiscal Year 2010. We will discuss how much of the decade-long $700 billion defense budget that has doubled since 9/11 will be cut and how. Then William Hartung joins us to provide a different perspective on the defense budget and how to cut it. He is the project director of the Center for International Policy and the author of Profits for War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. Joining us now is Gideon Levy, who is an Israeli journalist who writes for Haaretz and is the former spokesman for Shimon Peres. His books include Twilight Zone, Life and Death Under the Israeli Occupation and The Punishment of Gaza. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gideon Levy.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And your old boss is making headlines. Shimon Peres says on Sunday, the possibility of a military attack against Iran is now closer to being applied than the application of the diplomatic option. And of course, this has led the Russian foreign minister to warn that this would be a very serious mistake fraught with unpredictable consequences. So let's start with Shimon Peres. This is not exactly news that there's been speculation. It came from Maya Dagan, the former head of Mossad, who felt that Netanyahu was isolated, surrounded by hawks, and that the normal checks and balances from the intelligence professionals their counsel wasn't being heard because too many of the senior people had resigned. So let's start from that position then. How real is this, do you think, Gideon?
Nobody can tell, or very, very few can tell. But the public debate in Israel is a very healthy one because they think that it is about such a cardinal, such a fatal decision that it cannot be taken just by two, three politicians or two, three generals. And we are dealing here really with explosive material that can change the whole Middle East, that might even change Israel. Hopefully this attack will not take place. Hopefully Israel will understand that not everything is possible, and for sure not everything is possible by force.
And do you think, though, that my understanding is that the U.S. administration, the Obama administration, has been quite alarmed at this prospect for some time, and Panetta has been over there. I think Mullen has also been over there. Presumably the American national security people and the top military and intelligence people have been leaning on Netanyahu. So do you think that there could be some kind of a deal that would come out of that? In other words, the Americans are saying to Netanyahu, don't do this. The consequences are too drastic. And then Netanyahu says, well, if you won't let us do it, you better do something. Do you think that's going on?
Look, one thing is very clear. If the American administration will be very, very devoted and will be very, very clear telling Israel not to do it, Israel will never dare to do it. The question is how devoted and how clear is the American administration in its objection to a military attack on Iran? Anything is possible and any speculation might be the right one. It can be, it might be that the Americans are just saving face. It can be that the Israelis just want to hear the American no. Nobody knows. It's the arena is full of speculations, But one thing is very clear. If the United States will be very decisive in its objection, Israel will never dare to do something against a very clear American no. The question is, how clear and how devoted is the American no?
Well, logically, Gideon Levy, in an election year, if the price of oil went up to $10 a gallon, the president would be toast. I mean, the consequences of an attack on Iran are fairly unforeseen, but most analysts suggest that Iran has a fairly robust ability to retaliate through Hezbollah. They have extended-range rockets that could rain down on Israel, but they could also turn their rockets on Saudi Arabia and or the Gulf of Hormuz and shut down Western oil supplies. So that would be a pretty tough call for a president to make, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say, but I would also I would like to be much more convinced that all the decisions of the American administrations are always based only on logic. And unfortunately, it's not the case always. But yes, according to logic, there is no logic in an attack, neither by Israel nor by the United States, for sure not in the present timing. No logic, because they don't have the bomb yet. I believe they will never use the bomb. And I believe that even an attack will not prevent them of getting a bomb. It will just postpone it in a few years and maybe push them even harder to get the bomb.
Again, I'm speaking with Gideon Levy, who's an Israeli journalist who writes for Haaretz and is the former spokesman for Shimon Peres. His books include Twilight Zone, Life and Death After, Under the Israeli Occupation, and The Punishment of Gaza. And we're talking about speculation in Israel, which has been going on for some time, that Netanyahu is considering, along with Barak, the defense minister. I mean, this is not Netanyahu alone that hawkish intentions are attributed to him. But I guess the reason we're talking here, Gideon, is that the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, is about to release a report either Tuesday or Wednesday that supposedly has some convincing evidence that Iran is moving quite precipitously towards nuclear weapons. They apparently have some fissile material, maybe enough for four bombs, but more importantly, apparently they have designs of miniature warheads that would fit on ballistic missiles, and they've had the help of some former Soviet nuclear scientists, which is of course an interesting irony given the warning by the Russian defense minister Sergei Lavrov.
Yeah, these are all fearful news, but maybe we'll have to learn to live with the fact that Iran has a bomb, like we are living, unfortunately so, with the fact that North Korea has a bomb and Pakistan has a bomb. There are no less dangerous regimes there. I wish this will not become true. I wish Iran will not have nuclear weapons, but I'm not sure that we can do everything to prevent it. And I'm not sure that the alternative of bombing Iran is not more dangerous right now.
So how prevalent is your point of view that, because it's completely the opposite to what we are told is the response to a nuclear-armed Iran as an existential threat to the very survival of Israel?
It is an existential threat, that's for sure. But I believe that this is a threat that Israel has to live with, like many other threats. The threat of attacking Iran and getting in return thousands of missiles on Israel is a very much more concrete threat and must be also taken into consideration. I truly believe that Iran knows very well that the moment that they will touch the nuclear weapons that they might have one day, the moment that they will use it, this will be the end of Iran, because Israel might react and will react and the world will react, and that's the end of Iran. And I don't think that in Iran they don't know this.
Well, one of the things that's surprising about the current sense of quarantining Iran and the fear that exists out there, and this was also expressed by your former boss Shimon Peres on Israeli television on Sunday. He said, "I estimate that intelligence services of all these countries are looking at the ticking clock, warning leaders that there is not much time left." And apparently there is, if you could describe it as an alliance, you have Israel and the United States, to a lesser extent, apparently Sarkozy and Obama spoke about this at the G20 conference as well. But the interesting part of the mix is that Saudi Arabia's in there too. You have Israel and Saudi Arabia essentially allies in their concern about an Iranian nuclear weapon, given this recent report that there was an Iranian plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador, who's the very ambassador that in the WikiLeaks revelation that called for cutting off the head of the snake, meaning getting rid of the regime in Tehran.
Yeah, it's all true, and also Egypt might be another ally, and everyone in the West and everyone elsewhere is really hoping and must do anything possible to prevent nuclear weapons in the hands of these Ayatollah's regimes. There's no doubt about this. The only question is if bombing is the way to achieve it. And I think that diplomatic steps and sanctions are much less dangerous and maybe more effective.
Well, what about this sort of de facto alliance between Israel and the Saudis? We know that back in early 2000, the Saudis approached Israel with a peace plan, and recently Maya Dagan, the former head of Mossad, in criticizing Netanyahu for having these hawkish intentions to strike Iran, he also mentioned what a disaster it was that they dropped the ball on the Saudi peace initiative. So, given what's happening now in Syria, where the Iranians' regime is concerned that they're going to lose their ally Assad, and that there's more and more the lines are being drawn in a kind of cold war between the Sunni and the Shia, it would seem to me that would be the worst possible outcome, wouldn't it be? That at the moment where Iran is on the ropes and perhaps is going to lose Syria, wouldn't this be the time not to give them an excuse that the West is attacking them and not to play into the very narrative that the Iranian regime is putting out there?
Yeah, I might agree to everything you said, and still I want to remind you that bombing Iran, according to all the experts, will not prevent Iran of having nuclear weapons. It will just postpone it in few months or few years, not more than this. And on the other hand, it might explode the entire Middle East in their reaction together with the Hezbollah and the Hamas. It can become into something that we have never seen before. This must be taken into consideration. And I think that the world has to do anything possible to prevent Iran of having nuclear weapons, but also to realize that, like it happened with North Korea and Pakistan, it might happen also with Iran.
So what is the Israeli response, though, to obviously the region is changing in dramatic ways starting with Tunisia, then Egypt, and we know that that's had a serious impact on Israel's relationship with Egypt. But what about what's going on to the north with Syria, a regime that seems to be it's not on the ropes. It's obviously a brutal and well entrenched regime, but its brutality towards its own people, I think, is leading towards an inevitable armed struggle inside of Syria. And the Turks seem to be taking the side of the rebellion, if you will. Israel's been strangely silent on this. So tell us what's going on from the Israeli perspective.
No, Israel should be silent about it. Israel should be very careful not to interfere in any domestic Arab matters, not to interfere in the so-called Arab Spring, sit and wait. Anyhow, Israel is not on the agenda now in Syria. They are struggling about domestic issues, same for Egypt, same for all the Arab countries. They are now much more preoccupied with domestic issues, and very good so. And Israel can only be damaged by interfering. Israel should sit still, and this is what Israel is doing, I must tell you. Israel is trying, at least on the surface, not to interfere, just to watch and to see what will be the outcome.
But already things have changed. My understanding is that Iranian influence over Hamas has deteriorated because of what's happening in Syria against the Palestinians, and that they're moving. Hamas is now more and more moving into the Egyptian camp.
This is all true, but it's so fragile, and things are very fluid. Things can still change. And again, I must remind you and your listeners that the power of Israel to change the reality in the Middle East is very limited, and one should recognize it, realize it, that Israel cannot, you know, play around as if we are the only power in the region. Whatever will be, will be. We should observe it very carefully, but we can't... Those days are over in which Israel can encourage one regime against the other. No, no, that's not what Israel can do and not what Israel should do.
But Gideon Levy, is that going to translate into Israeli politics? If Israel is increasingly isolated in the region, which seems to be the case, and having lost its relationship with Egypt, relations with Turkey that have now turned sour. How is this translating the general sense of isolation in the region? And is that leading to a more of a kind of right-wing, entrenched, paranoid kind of polity? Or are people being more sober and thinking maybe we're going to have to, you know, reorient our thinking in terms of the region?
Unfortunately, the first option is the right one. Israelis in the last years are becoming more nationalistic, more many times militaristic, more even being arrogant than before, and believing that Israel has to live only on its sword and not on anything else. While the conclusion should have been exactly the opposite. As long as the Israeli occupation goes on, this is a fuel which feeds so many sentiments against Israel in the Arab world. And this should have come to a solution long time ago, and then I think Israel would have been in a much better strategic position.
Well, on that note, if that is your position, and I guess it's not, you're suggesting it's not the majority position, but is there any political movement on the left? Is the left sort of in permanent decline and the right in permanent ascendancy? Is that the reality?
No, unfortunately, there is almost no Israeli left, except of small political groups. But Israel is speaking more or less in one language in the last years, and the differences between these parties are very, very minimal. the difference between Likud and Kadima and even Labor in the political arena are really, really small. And it's not a very healthy sign.
Well, I thank you for joining us. It's an interesting discussion, Gideon Levy.
Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Gideon Levy, who's an Israeli journalist who writes for Haaretz and is the former spokesman for Shimon Peres. His books include Twilight Zone, Life and Death Under the Israeli Occupation, and The Punishment of Gaza. Let's take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about how much the defense budget is going to be cut. Tell you what, and you better think, little more. If you raise up your hand, you better raise up your clan. Fix up, master, and think about it, man. But wait, we really want to fight, yes, we. We really want to fight, what's it crazy? We really want to fight, yes, who? We really want to fight, trust me. We really want to fight, think about it, man. Think before you move. Run, cause you're not get far when you're done. You better call Fidela, think you run. You better call Fidela, think you run.